Hi, everybody. I am extremely nervous, so I'm just going to voice that. However, my higher power is with me, and so I am not afraid. My story is a long one because I'm 66. And for so many years, I really had no clue about food. My family and where I grew up. I grew up in a small town in Vermont. My dad came from a family of 15 and my mom came from a family of seven. Her mom died when she was 7 years old and then she was sent to a convent for a few years. My dad was in the war in the Philippines. When he got back, he and my mother married and had four kids. I'm the youngest of four. He had an affair with his best friend's wife. My mother found out about it and basically told him to leave. So he left when I was four. And they had some terrible fights during that time. And we kids would run into my sister's room and cry while they were yelling. And I remember one time my mother telling my father that he was hurting her. And he was a big man. He was 6'4", worked in a foundry lifting grain, and also had a job as a cop at second shift to try to make ends meet. We were poor. They had a mortgage on an apartment building, which had three apartments in it. We lived in the middle apartment. There was a basement apartment and an apartment above. So I was a melancholy introvert. When I was 6 years old, I had a ruptured appendix. I almost died, was in the hospital for 10 days or so. And it was very lonely. Being sick was very fearful. My mother had to work. My aunt would come down from the upstairs apartment to check on me. But basically, well, I was really, really, really sick. I was alone and people didn't really comfort me or talk to me because I was so sick. In the hospital, my dad came some nights, my mom came some nights, didn't stay very long, and I was very lonely there. I was introduced to major sweets there because my medicine was so bitter. I was refusing to take it and it was my antibiotic that I had to take. So the nurses had gotten some sweets from someone else that had appreciated them and they shared them with me. So every time I had bitter medicine, I got a sweet as a reward for taking my medicine. After that surgery and hospitalization, I always said I went from a size 6X to a 13 chubby. At that time, we had new neighbors upstairs and there was a little girl that was about my age. Her father drank in the evening and would call me Little Chubbs and then and call my mother Big Chubbs and ask how's Big Chubbs doing and would tease me about my weight. And he would pepper me with questions about my religion. I was raised Catholic and he would ask me, why did I believe in God? And all kinds of questions I couldn't answer. And so that was pretty intimidating as a kid. I ate when there was food on the table. And a lot of times there wasn't much food. My brother told me that there were times that mom would just stand and smoke a cigarette while we ate. And when he asked her why she wasn't sitting down, she'd say she wasn't hungry, but he believed it was because there wasn't enough food for the four of us kids. I was the youngest. And if you didn't get it the first time around, you didn't get it. So I learned to eat really fast and to find other ways to get food. And I used the people upstairs. They ate at weird times for some reason. So when they would eat, if I was upstairs with my friend, they would ask me if I wanted something and I never refused. I ended up eating two meals many evenings and I was up there a lot because we didn't have a TV, we didn't have a phone and we didn't have a car and they had all of those things. Plus Susie had all the toys, all the Barbies, anything that any kid ever wanted, she had. So I spent a lot of time up there playing with her. We had a service that delivered milk and a truck that came and delivered bread goods. And I remember getting a dime and being able to go out and pick something from the truck of all the goodies that were there. And they came at least once a week and was able to get a treat. That was always a big highlight. I walked to school, not 7 miles, like some people say, but just about a mile, went from first grade on. So I did a lot of walking, which was really my only exercise I got. And we had a big some big woods across from the house, and I would go up into the woods, and there was the smell of white pines, and I would just sit up there for hours until they called me down for supper by myself. I just remember being in nature and being in awe and feeling calm and peaceful in the woods. And that was something that I've carried throughout my life. I really enjoy nature. When I was in like seventh and eighth grade, you know, we had to do the 100-yard dash. And I remember being really bad at that. I think I came in next to last of all the kids in the class. I don't remember being overweight, though. I remember seeing a picture of myself. I thought I was fat most of my life. But the picture that I saw of myself, I was like, oh, well, I'm tall, but I really didn't look fat, but in my mind, I was always overweight. At that time, when I started high school, Twiggy was the model of choice. And of course, she was a stick figure and with large eyes because, you know, she had no fat on her. And that was the ideal. So my sisters and I struggled to try to watch our weight, and I continued to gain weight. There was a soda shop we used to stop at after school, and for a quarter I could get a double scoop of cold sweet stuff with cherry on top, and then I'd go home and have dinner. It was a pattern, and I didn't want to think that I, you know, shouldn't have that. My first love in high school was a junior when I was a freshman, and I didn't really know anything about boys, and I dated him for about 3 months, and then that was clear he wanted more from me than I could give or was willing to give, and so we broke up, and I attempted suicide. I remember standing in front of the bathroom sink with a razor blade from our shaver at my wrist. And I heard my mom come in with groceries, and she called to me to, you know, help her with the groceries. And at that time, I was so resentful that this guy had, you know, dumped me, and I was going to show him. So it was a recurring theme of kind of being left. My dad left me, you know, and this guy me and was having my pity party. But I dropped the razor, never went through with it, never thought of it again, and continued on. My mom would say, they can take your car, they can take your house, they can take your kids, but they can never take your education. And she had an eighth grade education, and my dad only had a sixth grade education. I think that was her message to tell me, if you want to get out of poverty, get a good education. And I definitely did not want to be poor. That was like one of my core beliefs, was I would never be poor. She got her GED when I was in high school, early in high school, and I wanted to excel. I really got the message how important education was. And I was so proud of her, and she was so inspiring. She really struggled, but it was really powerful. During high school, my dad asked my mom for a divorce, and that devastated me and my family. My mother, being Catholic, you know, in 1968, didn't believe in divorce, and women who were divorced were, you know, not thought of well. My dad waited 11 years to ask for a divorce. And every year before Christmas, we kids would pray that for our Christmas present, he would come home. So I was so angry with him and angry with the church. I left the church. I resented my dad. And the reason he'd waited was because he wanted to remarry. There was lots of drama. I had a summer job as a waitress, and he and his girlfriend, or I don't know when they got married, but at some point they were married, but they came in every Friday night. And if I was there, he tried to talk to me. I have no idea what happened to the customers that were in the building that I was supposed to be waiting on. I would hide in the ladies' room and wait for him to leave. So that went on for that whole summer. And then I would not speak to him if I did see him for about 5 years. So I had a lot of drama there. My eating got worse. I tried drinking. I started getting migraines in high school. And every time I drank like a beer or anything, I would get this terrible headache. Well, it turned out I had migraines, but I didn't know it at the time. So I just decided I couldn't drink. My mother never had, you know, drink in the house. So I, I wasn't used to it. And then my mom decided to go on a diet. She was heavy and I weighed about 142 at that time. I lost 25 pounds, found another boyfriend, got engaged as a junior. He used his college money to buy my ring. Looking back on it, it's like, that should have been a signal that maybe he wasn't going to be the right guy for me. But I had already applied for colleges. And at that time, I thought, well, maybe I wouldn't go to college. I'd just marry him. And my family was all holding their breath. They did not want me to marry this guy, but they knew if they said anything, my rebellious side would probably have gone ahead and gotten married. And he, grateful am I for his response, was, you're smart, you should go to college. I was an A student, studied all the time, was really responsible. Mom never had to ask me if I'd done my homework. It just was something I always did. I took the first computer programming class that was offered in our school and never looked back. My two beliefs were, I will never be poor, and I will not depend on any man for my livelihood. So that drove me to be astute in my education and in the career that I chose, because I wanted to make sure that I was going to be able to fend for myself. Because I'd lost weight, you know, I was feeling pretty good about myself, but I had this huge scar on my belly from my appendix, and I was very self-conscious about it. So, you know, I was covered up with bathing suits and things like that, and would never show my scar. When I went to college, I went to a two-year school and got an associate degree in computer science. And during that time, the first year I lived with my aunt and uncle, and he was a real perfectionist, more than anyone I'd ever seen before. So I had to really learn how to toe the line. And I was a perfectionist in some ways. My mom was a real clutterer. And so I spent a lot of time trying to clean the house. She was clean though. She washed the floors every week. But there was a lot of stuff around our house. Four, five people in a six-room apartment, it's going to take its toll. The second year of college, in that summer before, my boyfriend and I split up, my fiance. We broke our engagement. He had admitted he had a girlfriend, an old girlfriend who'd gotten pregnant and was marrying somebody else. And he just sobbed. And I realized that he didn't really love me. I was grateful that he made me go to college, but I broke the engagement. And he had told me at one time that he would steal someone's coat to keep me warm. And I remember thinking, I don't ever plan on being so poor that you have to steal anything from me. So we were like different levels of thinking about what my life was going to be like. I felt like I was finally in control of my life. The next year of college, I lived in a dorm with a bunch of other girls. I was, at that time, I'd gotten down to a size 4. I was 5'7". My stats teacher hit on me. I had a friend that would drive back to my hometown and give me a ride because I didn't have a car. And in the spring of 74, I met a student at another college that could give me a ride back. So every week I got a ride back with him, and we started dating. At that time, during college, I did diet pills. I did speed to try to keep my weight down. I had terrible migraines on Fridays when I was getting picked up to go back home. It was about an hour and a half drive. I would stop at the vending machine and get some candy. So my sugar levels were up and down a lot, but I was really restricting. He totally supported me to be 115 pounds. I thought support was when he would say, well, if you gain 5 pounds, I'll leave you. And to me, that was support. That was incentive to maintain my weight. We started hiking and camping in the New Hampshire mountains. My food was horrible. I was thin. I felt pretty, but I was so sick. I didn't eat well. It was all snacky foods. We smoked pot and I didn't drink. So to me, that was, you know, that was my vice of choice because I couldn't eat and lived on just sweets and sugary drinks. And if someone else cooked for me, I ate. But other than that, I didn't really cook much. And I was still on the outs with my dad at that time. Physical fitness became really important And I started, you know, at that time there were all kinds of shows that were coming out, you know, Jane Fonda, and I did a bunch of Jane Fonda videos and took belly dancing and got a bike and rode a bike quite a bit. So that was, and the hiking, of course, you know, we hiked mountains and took a lot out of me, but still I was restricting. He and I got engaged for about 2 months and we fought so much during that 2 months. I decided that just living with him was good enough and wasn't interested in getting married. We decided to move back to Vermont. We were living in New Hampshire at the time. And when I took the new job, I tripled my salary. So I was pretty happy about that. And we continued going to concerts, and I continued having migraines, and we did a lot of hiking and things. So I was really restricting in order to keep my weight down. It was very difficult. I weighed myself every day for years and years. I thought I had everything I wanted, but I still wasn't happy. So I didn't quite get that. Later on, he confessed he'd had an affair when we lived in New Hampshire, and I had to decide whether to keep him or not, but I really felt like if I can't trust my man, then it's over. I was devastated. And I went to therapy. I went to 3 therapy sessions. And by the end of that, I knew I had to leave him. So we split up. I had several incidents related to being thin that started me thinking that maybe being thin wasn't such a blessing. You know, I was attractive, but I worked in a manufacturing facility in the IT department. When I'd go out on the floor, I'd have cat calls at the plant. I remember going up to a guy and saying, I know you think you're complimenting me by, you know, making all these noises when I go by, but really it's quite embarrassing and I wish you'd stop. And I really, looking back on it, I can't believe that I actually said that to this guy, but he did stop. He worked for the man that I ended up marrying eventually. And I met him where I was working, and he was 9 years older than me. So I was about 25 and he was 34 at the time. Then my boss, who was going through a divorce, while we were on a business trip, he told me he was in love with me. And I still had 2 days to be on a business trip with this guy. And I told him it was just a diversion, that he didn't love me and he was going through a rough time. I was his friend and that was all. And he really scared me. He really kind of treated me badly. And I had to go to HR because I was really afraid for my job. I got kind of a backlash there. And then I changed jobs and worked in another department for somebody else, kind of moved out of the IT programming area, more into a consultant role. I wanted to stay independent after failing a couple of relationships and felt like I didn't need a man, but I did start dating and he was going through a divorce, didn't have any kids. And I weighed about 120 then. And we dated for about 3 years off and on. And I was definitely falling in love with the guy, but was trying really hard not to. And I ended up restricting foods, exercising a lot, not really, I wouldn't say dieting, just restricting. I don't remember if I counted calories at that time or not, but, you know, continued to have migraines. I went on an 18-month elimination diet with a homeopathic doctor. Of course, I didn't tell him I smoked pot. I didn't tell him I'd done, you know, speed and diet pills. Of course, at that time, I wasn't doing that anymore. But we were trying to eliminate my migraines. And it took 18 months before I could go a whole month without having a migraine. We figured out that there were certain foods that I was triggered by terribly. By the time I married, I had been hospitalized for a week with a pelvic inflammatory disease, which is inflammation of the uterus. After that, I remember I had weighed myself and I gained 5 pounds, which, you know, I was distraught about, that I weighed 125 when we got married in 1982. At that time, I was 27 and he was 36. So we didn't use any birth control and figured we'd be starting a family. But then I also decided I wanted to get my business degree. So I went back to school and went to school nights for 7 years, nights and weekends while working a 50 to 60 hour job. At the end of that, I graduated with, you know, 3.9 GPA. But during that time, we were trying to get pregnant. Nothing was happening. It was very stressful. The sex was not bliss when you're watching your cycle every month and trying to find the time that you're most fertile. And it was rough. We tried for about 8 years, and then we finally went to an infertility clinic. Found out that I had a lot of scarring from my ruptured appendix, and that was probably the cause. They said there were only two places in the United States they would recommend, and one of the places was Columbus, Ohio, which is where he was born and raised and where his parents still lived. So we kind of took that as a cosmic sign that we probably needed to move. And at that time, the company we were working for was offering severance packages. So I took a severance package and became a Color Me Beautiful image consultant. So I would have my own business when we made the transition, and took a package. We sold our beautiful home on a big hill and moved to Ohio. Lived with his parents for a few months. That was pretty stressful. His mom was very thin. The thinner, the better was kind of her philosophy. She was always all about how she looked, and she wore a wig, which was real prominent in her family, that wigs were, you know, the way to go. She had what she called bad hair, so wigs were the thing back then. So I was at that time 39 when we went through the in vitro process. We spent a lot of money. Luckily, though, we did have insurance from the company before, and we were on COBRA. So we paid $700 a month in premiums for that insurance, but they did pay for the in vitro process. They harvested 9 eggs and 2 of them fertilized, but one of them didn't fertilize soon enough. So they implanted 1 egg, and that turned out to be my daughter. And then 2 years later, we tried to thaw out the second egg, but it wasn't viable, which meant they couldn't implant it. But I'd already been on all the hormones and everything to prep my body for that implant. So my husband just said, okay, well, I guess I'll go to work then. And it was just like, okay, I guess we're done with this. And I didn't even know how I felt. I was numb. I was frozen. I was in terrible emotional pain, but there was no recognition of that loss. You know, I wasn't going to have any more kids, and I didn't understand it, but I went into a deep depression. I gained about 30 pounds in 3 months. I spent a lot of time sleeping. We were living in the basement of my mother-in-law and father-in-law's house. I had to really work hard to drag myself out of bed. So from that point, I had to, you know, get busy and get better. When I had my daughter, I only gained 17 pounds. So I was really careful about what I ate. And I weighed 152 around that after I stopped breastfeeding and all of that. So then by the time that I was ready to kind of go back to work, which was 3 years after we had, I wore a 1X was my size. And I spent a lot of money on clothes because I wanted to look good, even though I felt, you know, really fat. We bought a new house, and his dad had died when he was 6 months old. So we had moved in with his mom, lived in the basement again, and fixed her place up. She was on the west side. And when we sold her home, we bought the house we're in now, which had a mother-in-law suite. So that worked out really well for us. And she was with us about a year and a half before she had a stroke. We had to put her in a convalescent home, which we hated to do, felt terrible about it. Somewhere during that time, I got sleep apnea. I was continuing to gain weight. I was like 180 pounds then. My highest weight was 220. When my daughter graduated from high school in 2011, I was close to 220, if not already there. And I weighed myself every day so that I could beat myself up. It was rough. I did have a CPAP machine. I did start to feel better. I was on depression medication. In 2014, I decided I had to do something. Diets were no longer working. I tried several different diets, and I went on one popular one where I gained 10 pounds instead of losing. So it was like, okay, I finally had done enough experimentation that restricting and diets didn't work. And I went on this super expensive diet where they gave you was like hormones of pregnant women so that your metabolism raced. And I lost up to a half a pound to a pound a day. And I'd go on these cycles of 40 days. And then you had to take a break of so much time. And then you could do another round to lose, you know, more. So I would lose like 25 pounds in 40 days. I got down to 150. That was within my body, my BMI range. So that was, you know, healthy. And I had to only eat whole foods, organic. You know, it was really structured on no chemicals in your foods. So I was eating really, really healthy, but still I couldn't keep off the weight. It kept coming back. And every time I hit 175, I'd go back and do another round. I did that like three times before I finally walked into the rooms. As a newcomer to OA, I thought I was in control of my life. At that time, I weighed about 175 or 180. I knew finally and forever that diets didn't work, and I didn't believe in God. And that's when I walked through the doors. That was my belief system. So I came for the vanity, but I stayed for the sanity. I sat in front of a slogan on the floor that said, if God seems far away, who has moved? And it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you. I just knew I was in the right place. Everything that I heard, I could relate to. I was full of fear and worry. Fear is fear of the future. And, you know, resentments are things in the past. And I had both of those things, and I rarely lived in the present. I was self-centered. I was overly sensitive. I had a lot of shame. I beat myself up a lot, really poor self-esteem. I was so triggered in the initial meetings that I would stop at a fast food place to get something on the way home. And I thought, this is crazy. You know, I should stop going to these meetings because they're making me eat. When in fact, I was having feelings that I hadn't allowed myself to feel for so long. That was the only way I knew how to deal with them. So for anybody that's a newcomer or someone struggling, stay with the program. After a couple of months, that was subsided. But I remember calling my sponsor and saying, leaving the grocery store one day, I was like, I'm going to stop at a fast food place unless you talk to me until I get home. And she did that. And that was power. That was higher power. That was not me. Although I resisted the idea of the big G word, I knew that I was a spiritual person. If I could find a way to have faith and hope, I had a chance. I had a real chance at recovery. I was pretty passive aggressive in my relationship with my husband, and I'd be quiet about stuff, quiet about stuff, quiet about stuff, and then I'd explode. You know, and he would think I was nuts. Like, where did this come from? You know, and I'd been harboring all this resentment that came out in just the weirdest ways. At work, I would have, you know, some conflict or perceived conflict with someone, and I would end up in the ladies' room crying. I mean, crazy stuff. And, you know, step one is my life was unmanageable, right? And step two was came to believe. I did go on vacation about 6 months after going to OA, and I thought I was going to, you know, I thought I had it. I thought I could handle it. I gained 7 pounds in 10 days. I went to this family's home. They had tons of stuff in the freezer. And every time everyone walked out of the kitchen, I was in there eating something. I felt so terrible. I was so discouraged. But I kept coming back. And that is the reason that I'm here today. Today, by the way, is my 10 months of abstinence anniversary, and I couldn't be happier about it. I did, you know, had a sponsor. She's wonderful. I did a 12-step workshop. If you have a chance to do it, I really recommend it. The first three steps are give up. Steps 4, 5, and 6 are clean up. Steps 7, 8, and 9 are make up, and steps 10, 11, and 12 is keep up with progress and recovery. I used to say I had bouts of abstinence. And when I had a problem, if I eat over it, now I have two problems, right? That's important. I have a really strong program. I used the strong abstinence checklist when I was really struggling with abstinence and just kept trying to improve every day to do one more thing that was on that list. Have I been abstinent? Did I pray and meditate? Am I maintaining or working towards a healthy body weight? Did I rely on my higher power? Am I currently working to maintain my abstinence? And using those questions and the writing exercises, I was able to see what my trigger foods were. So primarily I've given up sugar and wheat flour, and I do eat only organic foods unless I'm eating out somewhere, which of course in the last year we haven't really done. At this point, and I can't believe I can say this after just less than 3 years, next month will be my third anniversary in OA, that I have received all the promises that are in the big book, page 83 and 84. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness, freedom from food obsession, emotional upsets, expectations of self and others. Keep me in a state of limbo, wondering when I'm going to lose my white knuckle abstinence, right? I could do 30 days. I did 60 days. I could go 90 days, but I couldn't keep it till I got to step three, where I could find a higher power, which first started out being all of you and now is the cosmic universe. I have found a new freedom. I don't regret the past. I did my amends. I forgave people that hurt me. And I can comprehend serenity and know peace. And I know that my experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I've lost some of my selfishness and am able to help others. So I'm sponsoring now. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Really, I have realized that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. That's been just freeing and wonderful. And with that, I pass.